This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 13, Coaching with Graham Gooch. On this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk all about the latest member of the Pitch Vision Academy panel. That's Graham Gooch, our memories of his scores and his reputation as a coach. We also answer a few questions, one about balancing the difference between winning games and making sure everybody gets a game, and one about a batsman with overactive hands. Can we help him out? Listen to this show to find out. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching better cricket, or to playing better cricket, no matter who you are and no matter where you are. And speaking of where you are, we have an international panel this week. First of all, joining me as always, but not from his normal haunt of Millfield School, but from a very distant land, it's the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garraz, where are you?
I'm in St. Lucia this week. I'm leading a coaching course out in St. Lucia alongside Andrew Strauss, the England's most successful ever captain and double Ashes winning captain. We're training out of the Beau Séjour National Stadium with a group of 20 cricketers and a number of families that have joined us for a holiday come cricket academy.
Fantastic. So that is a lot of very hard work, not very much time to get anything else done except really knuckle down and do some real serious stuff, right?
There's a little bit of that going on in the mornings, and then there's quite a lot of relaxation going on in the afternoons. And yeah, it's brilliant. It's a great thing, and we're having a super time out here.
Well, yeah, cricket can show you the world if you've got the right set of skills. And someone who moments ago was in a far less exotic location, his local co-op store, but now hopefully is somewhere a little quieter and with better Wi-Fi access. It's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hi, David. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Yeah, good. So what did you get in the shops?
I've got myself, I can talk you through it. I have a roast chicken salad sandwich.
Lovely.
Which is low in saturated fat.
Excellent. Good.
I have
examples.
A small tub of pineapple chunks.
Oh.
Which looks quite nice.
High in bromelain.
And I have a bottle of orange juice, which I'm told is increasingly bad for me.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of sugar in that, so you know, we'll give you a 7 out of 10 for that one. Well done, Lavers.
Okay, I'll take that.
Anyway, let's talk about something to do with cricket, shall we? And that is Graham Gooch, who this week has launched his Runmaker online coaching course on Pitch Vision Academy. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about Gucci and the experience and the knowledge that he has and any stories that we've got around that particular player and coach. And also the idea of coach education in general, because, you know, we've got this new approach to our online coaching, which is coach education, and Garraz, that started with you, and we've also developed it with Gucci, and we're going to be doing more stuff like that as time goes on, you know, specifically doing courses for coach the coach type stuff. So let's talk a little bit about that. Obviously, continuing development is very important for all coaches, no matter where you are on the spectrum, from, you know, an elite level coach all the way down to the guy who coaches the under 11s, right?
Definitely. And if you look at any coach education framework in whatever country that you're in, you go on the course and you learn your things. And it's a bit like passing your driving test, really. You only really learn how to drive, and you only really learn how to coach once you've gone away from that course with the basic skills in place. And then it's all about how much people want to learn and do continual development work, reading, looking at pitch vision courses, doing some mentoring work alongside another coach, so you watch the way that they go about things. And ultimately, the ones that develop the most significantly after they've been on courses are the ones that invest as much time and energy and sometimes expense into their own development. And, you know, putting courses on Pitch Vision allows us to touch so many coaches who in turn touch so many players that they then go on and work with, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. Having spoken with Gucci as well a few times now, you know, having met him to do the course, and we've done some follow-up videos with him, and you know, a couple of other meetings. He's such a great guy to learn these things from, because he's got so much experience, and he's, you know, both as a player and as a coach. You know, it is a valuable experience to learn from somebody like that.
Well, I think you're struggling to find somebody who has got so much experience across both playing and coaching. I mean, as a player, he was a phenomenal player, and there are a number of innings that stand out, but the two that stand out for me was his 100 in the semi-final of the World Cup, way back when it was in the subcontinent, where effectively he just played a sweep shot to every ball but nailed it for four, against some unbelievably good spinners, including Mahendra Singh, who was setting the world on fire at that time. And then an innings at Headingley, where he took on the whole of the West Indies fast bowling battery and carried his bat all the way through. And eventually England came out on top in a test match where he got 158 out of not too many over 200. You know, were phenomenal innings. But littered amongst that was his 333, which is a great innings as well. But those two really stood up. So as a player, he was phenomenal. And then when he got brought back into the England setup, and it was just after I'd left, actually, but the feedback that I received from the players, including somebody like Andrew Strauss that I'm with this week on the Super Skills Academy, they would talk so highly about the way that Gucci would make batting so simple, but also really focused in practice and making it very transferable, what they did in practice to what they did in the game. And it was very noticeable that one of his things being Daddy Hundreds, that the England batters started to score 150 pluses, 175s, 200s even. Whereas in the previous years, they'd been scoring 100 and almost thinking that was enough. And his experience and his knowledge sort of changed the way that they went about batting, and they got on that roll where they started to win virtually every test match they were playing.
That 333 against India is one of my earliest cricketing memories of, you know, watching cricket on the television. I don't know if do you remember that one, Lavers?
I do remember that one, yeah. I think growing up, something like that was such an iconic moment for any young person interested in cricket, that someone could score 333, and not only that, but someone from our own country could bat for so long with so much consistent success. It was an incredible thing to see as a young cricketer.
The interesting thing about that whole innings, and in fact that series, because Gucci that summer scored 1,000 runs in Test match cricket in one summer, is he got out the first ball he faced the whole summer. Richard Hadley got him out, LBW, first ball of the summer, and yet he went on to score 1,000 runs in a series. And again, that shows you a little bit about the bloke in terms of his robustness and his mental strength that allows that to happen, because it's a derailer for most people when that happens at the beginning of any summer, and not for Gucci.
I think that's one thing that shines through. If you actually get to watch his the video clips and the information that he's got on Pitch Vision, which I was lucky to do the other day, is I think his strength of character is something that will always shine through, and I'm sure he has a strength in lots of different areas of batting, but the strength of character is one thing that I think definitely sort of stands up and really shows to other cricketers what can be expected. And it's always great to, you don't need to have been an international cricketer to make people better at cricket, but when you can say, well, from my experience, when I was approaching 250, this is what I was thinking, it probably engages a test cricketer a little bit more, because he's been where you want to go, and he's done the things you want to do. So it's not essential, but it certainly helps, I'm sure.
And the system, the run maker system that he outlines in that course, you know, to give it a proper plug, is it helps you as a coach to understand, you know, the four main factors that go into batting and how you can coach each one of them. And they aren't necessarily all about having a great cover drive, although that is, you know, that is an important aspect. Technique is an important aspect. But when he talks about attitude and knowledge and concentration and all those other things, the things that you can develop in players, as long as you go about it with the right mindset, you know, it is an unmissable course if you want to develop batsmen who can go on and score big innings, which is a perennial problem in that, you know, you don't really get the opportunity to practice that kind of thing. And if you're building your practice around building big innings. That's going to help you to do it when you're out in the middle.
Definitely. No, you can't get better advice. So anybody who's interested in developing skills of batters or even developing your own game, I suppose, as well. Can't forget the players. Then it's a fantastic course for you.
Okay, let's finish up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got those questions, so let's fire away. First question. Hours of practice are necessary for great performance, but not sufficient.
No.
Yes.
Second question. Number three's role has changed from batting 40 overs to scoring quickly and batting 20 overs.
Yes.
No.
Third question. It's time to end the six left game in nets.
Yes.
Yes.
On this section of the podcast, we answer your questions. That is the listeners' questions, of course. Questions that have been sent in by people who listen to this show or perhaps are readers of the Pitch Vision Academy website. And the best question of the week, as well as getting answered, wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us if you wish to coach@pitchvision.com. That is an option that's always open to you, and there are plenty more which we'll tell you about at the end of the show. That's what Brendan did, and Brendan has sent in a question that says, whilst there are county and district teams in place for the more talented, and in our case, his club's case, I should say, multiple junior teams per age group, the issue of participation and inclusion is a big issue for us. The children want to win and are happy when they do, but the parents and children want each child to be part of that success. However, unless the better players perform in the majority of matches, the team's unlikely to be successful at the end of the season. How can you mix and match abilities in fixtures, friendlies and other teams to ensure that over a period of time, all have a fair chance to bat and bowl? So there we go. It's a classic club problem. You want to make sure everyone has a game. You want to make sure everyone enjoys it. But you also want to win. Can you mesh those two things together?
Well, I think you can, but to me, it all comes down to why are we there? That's the first point to me. And I think under the professional level, in truth, that we should be looking first and foremost at the development of cricketers, as opposed to the outcomes. And it's something that we pride ourselves on at the school that I work on, and it hasn't just come from me. It's come from David Faulkner, who won Olympic gold in hockey, who's the director of sport there. But it's all about the individual first rather than the team games, and the team outcomes. So if we do happen to win a national cup or we do happen to win a trophy, then it comes as a result of not making that our goal for the end of the start of the year, but actually by giving people opportunity to develop. So I'll give you an example. Our Mayors 11 team, which is our top team at school this year, have got eight batters who all bat in the top three or four for either their country, for their region, or for their county. And it's going to be impossible for us to pick the same batting lineup all the time and develop all of the guys that are going to be wanting to bat. So simply, Richard Ellison is going to mix the batting order up game on game to make sure that everybody gets an opportunity to bat in the top three, everybody gets an opportunity to bat in the middle, and everybody gets an opportunity to bat at the end. Now, obviously, we want to win a few games as we go along, but ultimately, the success of Millfield School or any club is the opportunities that they provide people with and where players end up going. And in club cricket, one of the crucial things is to retain players, to give them an experience at the start of their lives, which give them a sort of desire and motivation to have a lifelong involvement in the game. And we're not going to do that if winning is the foremost of our thinking. So I think as coaches, we've got an education piece to do, particularly with parents on this. And I sit down with all the parents of the kids that I coach at school and in other teams, and I give them a very strong message about why we're doing it. Not just because it's my view, but I back it up with some resource, I back it up with some anecdotes, I back it up with evidence of why we are doing it in the way that we are. So I've got a festival next week, and our batting order will change, our bowling order will change, where people field will change, Because you just don't know. I'm working with 15-year-olds next week, and a couple of them might end up doing a completely different skill set as a result. I'm with a 12-year-old this week who never kept wicket until 2 years ago, and he caught five balls in a training session that I did through Super Skills out in Sardinia. And I said, let's go and do a wicket-keeping session. We did it, and he now keeps wicket for Surrey under-12s. And without me doing that at the outset and showing him what wicket-keeping was like, he wouldn't have had the opportunity to develop into the cricketer that he's now becoming, which is fantastic. And that's what we should be doing as coaches.
Leivers, I know you're quite involved with a club side. So where do you stand on this?
Well, I think he's right in what he's trying to achieve. It's not an easy thing to do. At a junior level, it's maybe something that requires more than the buy-in of the individuals at a club. And maybe actually requires the buy-in of the group of teams you're playing with and against, and the league to a degree. So if the league are willing to try and make it an inclusive process for everyone, which ultimately is a good sort of development process for everyone in the league to have, then at certain age groups, I don't see any reason why they can't do that and make sure that everyone plays a part in every fixture. That would obviously take a little bit of tinkering with the rules and a little bit of an adjustment with how they go about doing it. But ultimately, that's going to make sure everyone's getting an opportunity to do something. And you might then find that someone who hadn't done something before and someone who hasn't had many opportunities to bat or says they're not a batter, maybe because they're not confident or they're nervous about it, finds that they're batting at number 3 or 4 one week and actually finds that they enjoy it. And as soon as they engage with that enjoyment and they start to think they could do it, then maybe they spend a bit more time practicing it, and suddenly they're in that upward spiral of going from not being in a position where they feel confident or have a particularly high level of skill to suddenly developing week in, week out. So it'd be interesting to see what any league's view was on trying to incorporate all players within the league, rather than having the traditional method of teams been left to their own devices. And ultimately, some clubs will go down that route of being very inclusive and allowing everyone to have their game. But as we know, and as has been alluded to in the question, this isn't always going to bring immediate success, which you can't blame a 12 or 13-year-old boy for wanting immediate success in the form of a win. So, it'd be interesting to see what a league's view was on that and if there was a way that we could allow everyone to be included in every fixture.
That's really tough to put into place, I feel, in terms of having rules, because the problem that you have with, if you start changing the rules too much away from the laws of cricket, then you start getting complaints about even from the kids themselves saying, well, you know, this, we're not playing cricket anymore, we're playing some crazy variation which is similar to cricket, but you know, we want to play proper cricket by the proper rules. And you, I think you get a lot of pushback with that. So it's a delicate balancing act to do that if you're bringing in specific rules about the number of people who have to bowl or things like that.
I think that's a really good sort of like vision or big picture. But the reality of it is to me that it comes down to individuals and it comes down to the club and what is the philosophy of the club. And what is the philosophy of the coaches that are working within that club? And I think really good conversations have to happen about what are we here for? What is our purpose? What is it about? And to me, you know, any cricket club around the country would love to have somebody playing in an England team or somebody, you know, playing in their national side around the world, because that is the best advert for their cricket club. That will get people coming in, and we see that at school. You know, if we produce an international, then that ensures that we've got a number of different people coming into the school over the next 10 to 15 years. The legacy, I suppose. But that comes from a philosophy. And so I would encourage a conversation about what's it all about. How are we going to do this? And don't wait for leagues to sort it out, because if you're waiting for a league to sort it out and to come up with these ideas, you're probably going to be waiting a little bit of time. It comes down to you as a group of people and what you're there for. And we're very clear where I am at school, and I embrace that hugely. And as I say, it's not my idea. I just live it out as best I can, really, within cricket. But it goes across all of our sports. But it's about the individual development, whether it be a guy on the third team that wants to be involved in cricket for the rest of his life, or whether it be somebody who's playing international cricket now who under 18 who wants to play for England in test matches. It's exactly the same. We create opportunity for them. We develop them as individuals. And if we win off the back end of it as a team, and that's a byproduct rather than being the main emphasis.
And it's not like these things are competing aims. If you're developing players to the best that they can be, then you're going to have more success, aren't you? I mean, it's not like, it's all about what you're focused on rather than what's going to happen. Because if you have a very talented group, then you're going to win more than if you have a less talented group. But no matter which of those two groups you have, they're going to be more successful if they're developed as strongly as they can be developed.
Exactly right.
Next question's from Simon. And Simon says, the biggest problem I face in cricket is batting. I have overactive hands. I'm often caught straight when driving the ball. My hands push forward too much and I pop it up in the air. Also, when playing off my legs, rather than clipping the ball through mid-wicket, I'll either hit it behind square on the 45 or I'll turn my hands over too much and get a leading edge. This is also a common dismissal for me. Can you help?
Have you ever had overactive hands, Gareth?
No, I was the least overactive hands person in the world with a cricket bat in them, mate, that is for sure. I used to hit through cricket balls, and if it wasn't there to hit through it, I'd probably end up nicking it.
What can we do for Simon then?
Well, my first point would be that there's a lot of people out there in the world that would, I was going to say cut your arm off, but it might be cut your hands off to have overactive hands, because the ability to be able to manipulate the ball and to be able to feel the ball on the bat and to turn it into areas or to strike the ball behind square when most people would hit the ball in front of square with certain shots are real assets. And somebody like a Michael Bevan, for example, who's got a brilliant course on pitch vision, was an absolute master at that, as too is Kevin Peterson, who's got a brilliant course on pitch vision. And that's what they did for a living. What they both did was that they found a way of mastering it. So rather than trying to stop their hands, they found a way of managing their contacts. And it sounds to me that you need to do a bit of experimentation about whether you need to play the ball right out in front of you, slightly out in front of you, or really close to you to get the best results in what you're trying to do. To me, your contact point would be the first place that I would go, but certainly I wouldn't be trying to get you to be anything other than very active in your hands, because once you learn to master that, you'll be absolutely awesome. Somebody like Sangakkara, who's just scored four hundreds in four innings at the World Cup, has got a fantastic ability to utilise the wrists and the hands and have a feel for the ball on the bat and guide it into certain areas. You know, he scored 400s in a hard-hitting World Cup, yet we wouldn't necessarily put him in the top 10 hard hitters in the world. He's more of a batter that feels a ball into space, into gaps, and can clear fielders by using his hands appropriately. So to me, your overactive hands are actually a strength. What you need to do is just work on your contact points and establish which contact, one out right out in front, the one slightly out in front, or the one underneath your eyes or close to your tummy works for you best.
It's something that happens at this time of year in the UK a lot, isn't it, Lavers? Because, you know, you've been playing on those nice hard indoor wickets, and then you go out onto a puddin' and it's still soaking wet and you just about get the game on, and then a little dibbly-dobbly medium pacer bowls one that almost stops in the pitch.
Yeah, they should be shot, shouldn't they? it's horrible, isn't it, sometimes when you develop your skills and you maybe develop them in a certain environment, and then you leave that environment and you go and play in completely alien conditions almost, where after 2 months, 3 months, 4 months inside on a nice firm pitch, you're then down to a soft pitch that doesn't come onto the bat, and ultimately that risk of chipping the ball up in the air or those wrists closing on the ball and your hands getting through the ball a bit early and the leading edge does come around. I think this is where there's always an opportunity, though, to improve your net practice to try and prepare you more for what you're going to become accustomed to when you get outside. I actually went outside this morning. We didn't actually bat on the surfaces, but we went outside, made a little bit of a bowl on some grass, which was nice. And just looking at it, you can see immediately that the conditions are going to be very, very different. And unfortunately, we've done a little bit of batting with two mats down in on a surface. We've also done some batting with mats upside down as well, so batting on the rubber side. And it's not necessarily that we think that that replicates what we're going to play on when we get out in the middle, but it's just makes batsmen try and adapt to what they're what they could potentially experience. So gives batsmen an opportunity to adapt their skills, adapt their timing, adapt the way they make a decision. So they're slightly better prepared when they turn up and the conditions are something that they're not completely accustomed to, rather than just walking out and saying, oh, the pitch is slow. Well, you knew the pitch was going to be slow. We've prepared all our shots for it. Why haven't we prepared our decision-making or our ability to adapt for the same thing? Okay, well, it's soapbox time. So this week, it's over to David, who has got an exciting topic for us.
I read a really good document recently, which was a bunch of questions that you can ask the players. And one of the questions that got me really excited for when I start my new coaching job next week, or week after next, is that often get frustrated with a session, and they get to the end of a session, and I think that was... I ran that session well, but I don't feel like everybody got as much out of it as I hoped they would have at the beginning. So the question that was going to help me help improve those sessions is just simply asking to the people who had the session, how can we make this session better next time? And then if I'm having particular frustrations about the way that a session's going, then I can see whether that matches with what is happening with the players. Sometimes it's going to work out that... they're going to say exactly what I think is happening, and sometimes I'm going to get new insights. But either way, the next time we have a session, we're going to be better off. And that is the end of the show for this week. We're all done and dusted, apart from a couple of little bits of admin, the first of which is to decide on the winner of this week's prize of the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the contenders for the question were Brendan's question about balancing winning and giving everyone a game, and Simon's question about having overactive hands. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Brendan's one. I think it's a great question, and philosophy behind what your purpose is as a coach, or what your purpose is as a cricket club developing young cricketers, is crucial. So I'm going to go with Brendan's swing.
Congratulations, Brendan. And if somebody wanted to send in their question, have it answered, and have their chance to win that prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can get us through the social media platforms. Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can also subscribe to this show with your favourite podcast app. Just do a search for us in whichever one you use, on whatever platform that you use, whether it's Windows or Mac or iOS or Android or anything, any other magic that you've got. There's something there with us in it. And if you want to go to the website to find out more, stream the show and get the show notes and all that kind of thing, you can do that as well by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link for all the details on how to subscribe or stream and get the show notes. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, guys.